I will call the meeting to order. It looks like we do have a quorum. So, Representative Brown, have you looked over the minutes?
No, we didn't move them.
Representative Brown moved the minutes of February 18th. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Representative Emmer has the first bill up, and this is our first day this biennium, Representative Emmer, of actually hearing bills, and you are the first. Oh, yes, we had Representative Dietrich. Well, no, you're the second. The staff just reminds me. But that's still a good place. I figure House File 2 is a good spot as well. Pardon me. So, Representative Emmer, have you asked someone to move your bill, or should I do it?
I have not, Madam Chair.
Okay, so I will move House File 107 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And we in this committee, we lay all the bills over, and then when we do the omnibus bill, that's where they pop up. So if that's all right. And then Representative Emmer, you do not have any amendments, so you can go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing this bill. I will tell you that the genesis is the woman seated, well, it would be to my right, which is unusual, I know. Ms. Kelly Kapoor, she's going to tell you her story, but this is also something that we did on the fly, and I have told Kelly and introduced her to the chairwoman today. This was something that Chair Greiling and Representative Mariani helped with last spring. Essentially what this does, and again, Kelly will tell you her family story, her experience with this, and why she brought it to me. This authorizes a school district to use a portion of staff development revenue for basic first aid training. That's all it does. And we actually passed it on the House floor last year, and it didn't make it into the final bill. That's why we're back before you. So with that, I introduce Ms. Kelly Kapoor.
Thank you, and welcome, Ms. Kapoor. And I understand your mother is also right behind
you.
So
yes, she is.
This is a twofer, I imagine. So.
Yes.
And members, we have Ms. Kapoor's testimony on the orange sheet, but she will give it to us as well. And please state your name for the tape, and then go ahead and give us your testimony.
My name is Kelly Kapoor. I am a mother of two that attend Fieldstone Elementary in St. Michael, Minnesota. Last year, November 2nd, my son Brady, then a third grader, had a serious accident on the school playground. He was accidentally pushed off a slide, falling approximately 15 feet to the ground. None of the teachers who were out there at the time had witnessed the fall. A classmate had brought his teacher to Brady. Then the teacher had him get up and had a classmate walk him to the nurse. I received a call from the nurse's aide saying Brady had an accident. He was okay but shook up and asked if I wanted to come get him. When I got there, I knew by his actions that his condition was worse than I expected, so I made the decision to bring him to the hospital. While at the hospital, it was brought to my attention by a nurse that an ambulance should have been called and he should have not been moved after a fall like that. Brady's accident resulted with two broken wrists, a sprained leg, and a black eye. During his recovery, many questions were brought to mind. After the accident, I did some research and discovered that the state of Minnesota does not require teachers to be CPR and first aid certified. After realizing the mistakes that were made from this accident, I have questioned the safety for our kids at the school. I believe that all teachers who work with children should be required basic first aid and CPR skills. I do believe that safety in our schools should come first. I was told that there is always someone at the school with this training. When an accident or a situation occurs, minutes, even seconds, are critical for responding. In a school classroom setting, the teacher is often the first responder. Sometimes there is no time to wait for the school nurse. The teacher, being the first responder, should know how to handle any situation. By requiring all teachers to receive and follow up with first aid and CPR training, this will make our schools a much safer place for our children. After going through this experience, my goal is to see a state mandate requiring all teachers to be CPR and first aid certified. I am promoting awareness to make a change to see this happen. Brady is a very lucky boy. While having both arms in cast for 10 weeks and 2 months of physical therapy, he is now fully healed and doing well. So I present this goal of mine to all of you in hopes that we can make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kapush. And as I said to Representative Demmer ahead of time, I'll say to members, I said there had to be a passionate constituent or someone that Representative Emmer knew for all his passion on the floor last spring, and that was definitely shows why you are passionate about it as well. We have a question from members first, Representative Biskins, and then Representative Detmer. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. The first to Representative Emmer. Representative Emmer, after hearing the testimony and yet looking through the bill, is there any mandate in this bill to school districts?
No. Representative Emmer.
No, Madam Chair. Representative Biskins, no. As Ms. Kapush has said, that is her goal, but we didn't take that route this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my second question, and I'm just a lowly math guy, so I may need some help, but what is in November if I can turn your attention to the bill, please? Do you have the bill in front of you, Representative Emmer?
No, I don't.
One of the pages will get it for him. Thank you, Carmen.
Madam Chair, Representative Emmer, if I could turn your attention to page 2, line 3, and just a quick question, because I'm not sure it reads right, and I want to make sure we have your intent. Should the last word on that line be of?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Ms. Kapush is advising me that in the Senate, where it's already been heard, and I know that's not appropriate to bring up, but might be instructive, the word was for. So if you would like to move a, if someone would like to move an amendment to it, I think we'd be...
Representative Biskin.
Madam Chair, because he's my friend, I'd like to move on. Page 2, line 3, strike the word or and insert the word of.
Thank you, Ripson Biskins, and I will incorporate I will incorporate that into my motion. Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. I think in most cases in schools, in my case, we have had people on staff that are certified first aid trainers, CPR first responders, and I know that many times I am and other people on my staff conducted the training during during our teacher workshop time, staff development time, and I think this is something that districts really need to take a close look at in terms of their staff development and look at that training during their staff development time. So.
So it sounds like you're giving a testimonial in favor of
the I support, yes.
My own city of Roseville had a plan where as many people as possible could take trainings for free, and then the ideal was we would have a lot of trained people all around the city for just this sort of thing. So my husband took it. I was too busy being an elected official, but he managed to get in the training. Representative Depke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mrs. Kapush, a couple of questions for you. After this happened to your child, and I know that was a very upsetting situation, I can understand that. By any chance, did you bring your concerns to your local school board? You did, and I would be interested in see what their response was, and also if their current school board policy on emergency situations like this.
Ms. Kapush.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Yes, I spoke at the school board twice. They, because it's not a requirement, they said I can't certify all 500 of their teachers, but what they did is they certified their paras and their custodial staff. So every time a teacher brings the class outside, they have to bring one of those paras with them. So that has helped as well. But they've been very supportive with this as well.
Okay. Good. It sounds like your school board was responsive,
yes.
Don't you?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Members, any other questions? Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I'm very happy to see this, Representative Emmer, because in our school district, we just put AEDs in each of the 55 buildings. And one of the questions that came up was the cost associated with training people. And also, at that same time, we found that we had less and less qualified, Red Cross qualified people that were CPR trained. So this is going to help the districts where, you know, sometimes the teachers were having to pay for some of this training themselves. So thank you very much for bringing this forward, and thank you for presenting it.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Emmer, I just want you to know, I think you probably already know I support this bill. I've signed on as a co-author. But currently, are we not able to use CPR training out of the staff development funds, or do you just think that by bringing light to the issue that will encourage it?
Representative Emmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, both. I believe the answer to your first question, I believe, is yes. I think you can use this currently, but this will clear up any confusion in that regard, which is why I think it's a good thing to do. Plus, when the experience and I know that I'm going to hear about this, but when Chairwoman Greiling and Representative Mariani make this suggestion as a way to do this, I'm all ears. This is a good idea. And yes, the second part also is a yes. It's to raise awareness.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Okay. With no other questions or comments, Representative Emmer, did you want to have a closing statement?
No, thanks. Thank you for your consideration. How's that?
Oh, Representative Emmer, I'm sorry, I didn't see there. Was Representative Depke was not done talking?
Oh, yes. I apologize. I just had another question. Regarding the bill, have you talked with your local teachers union about that, and how do they feel about this as well?
Ms. Kapush.
And I'm asking you because they certainly right now control the continuing education funds. It's up to their body to vote on how the funds are used.
Ms. Kapush.
Thank you, sir. I haven't talked to the local teachers union yet. I just been going through here, but the teachers, yeah, and everyone's supportive of it. So,
and usually, Representative Emmer, if the teachers union does not support something, right about now we would be hearing about that.
That's right, Madam Chair. Representative Depke has had that experience.
I was wondering why the teachers union wasn't here.
So,
thank you very much.
Thank you. The House File 107 then will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Emmer and Ms. Kapush.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Representative Norton. Welcome to the committee. Those of us who serve on education policy have already heard Representative Norton's bill, House File 195, but since there's only eight of us, we're going to get to hear it again. And we'll continue to talk with leadership next biennium about not having these sorts of duplications. But Representative Norton had two bills, and one of them went to Representative Rukavina's committee. So we can imagine what might be going to happen to that one. But there is this second bill that she has that's going to now be amended, and it's our understanding then that Representative Rukavina does not need to see this bill. So, Representative Norton, do you have someone prepared to move your bill, or do you want me to move it?
Would you move the bill?
Okay, Representative Norton, then I'll move House File 195 be recommended to pass and returned to the Finance Committee. We do have some interest in the part of school districts to have this one be considered on the floor, because districts are doing their calendars right now rather than save it for the omnibus bill. And then that amendment that you have, members, it should be in your packet, A1 amendment, that Representative Norton would like to get in the shape that she wants and to cut down on the controversy, since we really do need to cut to the chase for district calendars right about this year. So I will move amendment 80195A1. And Representative Norton, would you explain that amendment before we vote?
I would, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. I had thought when I brought this bill forward that the K-12 policy committee that they might find this more appealing, and it might appease the resort owners and some of the Iron Range legislators who were opposing the bill. But comments in my own hometown paper and in conversations I've had and the reaction at the first committee has convinced me that this will not make any difference. And so I am putting the bill back in its original position, which is simply a two-year moratorium.
Very good. And members, this the two-year moratorium is something this is my 17th year in the legislature, and we've always done these sorts of bills when Labor Day is very late, as it is for the next 2 years. So I think we're more into a pro forma bill, so we won't have as much fun as they had in the policy. Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor? Oh, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if the amendment passes, which essentially strips out any funding implications, would it then not be appropriate to simply then move this bill out of here?
And Representative Biskin, that's actually the motion that I made, to send it to finance, which is its stop before it heads off to the general register.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, one other question of the chair. Madam Chair, if the funding implications are stricken out of this bill, Madam Chair, will you entertain a long, protracted debate about a bill that doesn't have funding implications in your committee?
Thank you, Representative Biskin. That's exactly what my statements were trying to encourage, and I'm glad you've added to them. We don't probably need to hear as much as they heard in education policy. Thank you. Any other Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I don't serve on the education policy subcommittee, so I'm looking forward to this long, fruitful debate on this this issue. But, Madam Chair, I am I like this amendment. It's a good amendment, but I think we can make it better. So I'm going to move an oral amendment to it, and that's going to be line 2 on page 1, before the number 2, include a 1 and a comma.
Include a Representative Garofalo, I couldn't hear what you said. A 1?
So the line 2 will read as follows. It will read page 1, comma, delete sections 1, comma, 2, and 3. That's what the oral amendment would do.
Representative
Norton.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, thank you for the good chuckle this afternoon. I would speak against this. Of course, it completely cuts down the bill, and that's not my intent to be here today.
So, Representative Garofalo, are you really are you just introducing that for fun, or do you want us to vote on your amendment?
No, I'm serious. I'm willing to talk. Maybe we could just have a discussion about my amendment to the amendment as opposed to on the overall bill, and that might speed up the discussion.
I would
have a discussion.
You know, in my opinion, your amendment is the bill, which we're going to hear and then vote on. And so you're trying to shut down the testimony, or what is your intention here?
Madam Chair.
I plan such a good testimony, Madam Chair. I'd really like to be able to provide it.
Members, we will. I guess Representative Garofalo is serious, so we can vote on it, but I would just caution members that by voting for Representative Garofalo's amendment, then Representative Norton's bill is not heard at all. And I would suggest that the vote total will be the same on this oral amendment as what we will have on the final bill, which we will be voting on because it's been going out of this committee, which is not what we usually do in this committee. So that would really shorten things up, wouldn't it, Representative Biskin?
Madam Chair, I guess to that point, I'm hearing you say that you are interested in a thoughtful debate on this. I was hearing sort of a dialogue here that we were going to maybe just pass this amendment and kind of scoot things along. What I'm hearing from you is that we are going to have a good back and forth on this bill, and we are going to have a good discussion. So, given that assurance, I'll withdraw my
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Well, who is part ranger? I think I'm not sure of his roots, but as near as I can tell. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, now that we've heard the Chair's explanation of this, what we're doing here, you know, with the bill, I just want to urge members not to vote for this bill. I want to make sure that members know, as I've said many times in the past, Northern Minnesota is timber, taconite, and tourism. And we just can't take any more hits. All three of my counties are now at double-digit unemployment. Double-digit already. And while I understand that the tourism economy struggles to pay wages that are commensurate with other wages in tourism in
excuse me just one minute. We are actually on the amendment, not the bill. And so I think you might want to say, it sounds like you're commenting on the bill. Representative Norton is moving to strike two sections of her bill, and then we'll be back with the original bill.
I thought I understood your explanation. I guess I didn't.
Okay, yeah. Representative Garofalo, removed his amendment. So now we're back to amending the bill and voting on that, and then we will hear all the testimony and vote on whether or not to send the bill to finance. So your speech would be really in order at that point, or even after the amendment. Do you have anything to say about the amendment which removed section 2 and 3 of the bill? Okay. All right. Any other discussion on the amendment? Amendment A1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Norton, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. In the coming 2 years, we will see relatively late school start dates, September 8th and September 7th, due to the late Labor Day holidays. This is problematic for school districts who are trying to live within the requirements that we have imposed of a certain number of school days, of a certain number of teacher contact days, holidays, and the like. Graduations and last days of school for many districts, including mine, will be mid-June for the next 2 years if we do not allow them the option of starting prior to Labor Day. My district has 183 required school days. That is one of the highest in the state, and at this time that cannot be altered. And so we're looking at approximately June 14th for graduation and last day of school. There are a myriad of reasons for addressing this law which micromanages school districts and caters to a particular industry, and I'll just name a couple of them. The agrarian calendar no longer meets the needs and activities of today's society. We must let districts make school calendar decisions based on their own students and their own citizens' needs. And this leads us to local control. This bill does not mandate an earlier school start. It simply allows districts to make their own choice about what calendar works best for their students, their community, and their staff. This bill fits nicely within our attempts this session to repeal unnecessary mandates. By giving districts the freedom to set their own calendar, there will be a much better match between activities that are currently happening, and that's approximately starting in mid-August. Families are already limited for travel due to college start dates, which are typically mid-August, a little bit later, and school activities such as athletics. Data shows that over 88,000 of our youth already participate in sports or fall activities, and in my family's case, that also includes band. And those begin practice in August. These students and their families are already restricted in path and travel during this time of year. One of the arguments we've heard is that the resort industry will be negatively impacted by an earlier start date. The schools who reside in these areas that have those resorts can continue to start at whatever date they choose, post-Labor Day. And that's what will best meet the needs of those communities. The resort industry has been shrinking steadily, and there is absolutely no indication or data that I have been shown that shows that the school start time has any correlation to what has happened. There's no data to show that in the past years where there has been a moratorium that the industry has responded in kind. Lastly, what this bill can also help to do is help us address the gap that many schools and students are having in learning. And I'm not going to get into this too terribly, though I know many of you around the table are concerned with closing the gap. And one of the ways we can do that, and there is data both from ERIC as well as a school district such as my own that has shown that students lose particularly math skills and spelling skills over the summer due to the long length of time. And perhaps changing the agrarian calendar to be able to adjust to the needs of the districts who have those issues, that this would help with that. With less reliance on the agrarian calendar, schools would be better able to address the needs, the academic needs, for the students in their districts. And in closing, we are one of only three states that have a post-Labor Day start mandate, Michigan and Virginia being the other two. A few have dates that have start dates mandated ranging between actually August 1st and September 1st. In my opinion, and I hope in yours, it is time that we allow our districts the flexibility they deserve in setting their school calendars. That's the end of my comments, Madam Chair, but we do have a few who'd like to testify if you would entertain that.
Okay, and it looks like first on the list is John Curry, Superintendent John Curry, from Rosemont Apple Valley Egan School District. And then we have Kirk Schneiderwald-Wynn from MSCA, and then Scott Kruchwitz from AMSC. Welcome, Superintendent Curry.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. I'm here to speak to the ability for schools to start before Labor Day, obviously. And for us, it's a question of local control as much as anything else. And it seems that this is a decision that should be entrusted to the local school board. To add to our local school's position on this, I'll point out that I'm a member of the executive board of AMSC and have been working with their legislative agenda, and this particular item is on there. And I'm also the chair-elect of the legislative portion of Minnesota School Administrators, MASA, and that also is a primary concern of that organization as well. Also involved with C, and that's also along with their line. So I believe I represent the thoughts and feelings of several different institutions as I speak to this issue. But let me talk a little bit about our personal story in District 196. Last fall, in conjunction with some other work, we did a survey, and one of the questions we asked on that survey was, do you believe that the decision about when the first day of school is in our district should rest with the hands of the local school board? And the response from our citizens, and this is out of 7,000 people that responded, 70% said yes and 16% said no. A second question said, do you prefer to start before Labor Day and with a corresponding later dismissal in June, or after Labor Day with a corresponding later dismissal in June? Maybe I said earlier, later in the first part, but you got the concept. And that one was over 2-1 in favor of starting before Labor Day and having an earlier dismissal in June. I think each of our principals and teachers would prefer a week in August to a second week in June in terms of the classroom. And that can be hard to define why that is, but it's a reality, I think, as you look at our classrooms. We also had a series of 35 meetings about some other issues and at each of our sites, and with each of the site councils, these same concepts were registered by our community. In terms of the students' participation, well over half of our students are involved in activities in August, and so they're in town already. And we have them, and there are all kinds of things going on with extracurricular activities and getting ready, open houses and those kinds of things. So again, we would prefer that the local board be able to make this decision. I understand this particular statute in front of you has just a moratorium for 2 years. We find that preferable to the situation we have now. And finally, the other thing I'll say is that we would appreciate a decision on this earlier. Actually, Representative Biskins and I were together at Blackhawk Middle School. I was there for 5 years. 3 of those 5 years, we were allowed to start before Labor Day. And the reason was when Labor Day occurs. And so we're just asking that you reach at least that same decision this time and also do it fairly quickly. My board last night asked me, in our position where we've adopted two calendars and we've said we're going to wait to see what the legislature does on this, they've said to me, how long do you think we should wait? Because the reality is right now, our community, as well as the many other districts that have adopted two calendars, they're not making plans and booking vacations for the last week in August now anyway, because they don't know about the calendar. So again, we prefer the chance to make that decision locally. In the absence of that, a 2-year moratorium on that would be great, and an early decision would be even better yet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Schneider wouldn't. I'm going to take the three testifiers, unless that was a specific question for this person, or is it on the topic? This person?
To this person.
To this person. Representative Biffkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Curry, is it true that on the last week of August, you'll be playing golf on some course in Chicago, no matter what?
Okay. We won't make him answer.
Oh, no, Madam Chair, I think you can.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I do believe that Superintendent Curry is retiring at the end of the school year. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
Superintendent Curry.
Mm-hmm.
More's the pity, so. All right, Representative Detmer and Ward, are you to this person, or can you wait till the three testifiers? Okay. Mr. Schneider wins. Schneider will win. I can never.
No. Madam Chair, I've been called worse, believe me. My name is Chris Nyland. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And, you know, this is a position that, well, let me back up here for a second. We represent all 340 school districts, and we understand that this is a contentious issue even within our membership on this issue. But we have a very deliberative democratic process that allows for our membership to vote on our positions. And this is a position that our membership has supported, including the starting date and the end date of this school calendar. And many of the issues have already been touched on, but I want to emphasize that we are one of only three states that requires a post-Labor Day start. And so we've talked about many of the things that are unique to Minnesota, and that's certainly one of them. I think that our school boards, and we had tons of calls in our district office, where are we on this? Can we make a decision? We're sitting on two or three calendars, and sooner better than later, so I just want to emphasize that point as well. And I think that the demands for student achievement continue to increase. As you know, MTLB has a 2014 goal of 100% proficiency, and we're continuing to find issues in the achievement gap that are trying to make those things work with those students who are coming to the United States new and trying to improve their literacy and math skills. I think it's also important for you to understand that local communities understand the importance of the state fair and 4-H. And they also understand the importance of the tourism industry to Minnesota. But I would argue that that's a decision that those discussions should be happening at the local school district within their community to allow those students who participate in those valuable 4-H experiences would certainly let them go. And I just talked with a board member from Wellington the other day and how important that is to their community, but also they believe that decision should be made by the board and the community making that decision. And lastly, I just want to emphasize the fact that we have 90,000 of our kids already in the public school system in the middle of August for all of the extracurricular activities. And I think once those extracurricular activities start off, there's something internally that goes on in the kid's mind that I'm ready to start school. And I think that giving those boards and the communities and understanding the community input are the key ingredients of making a right decision. And lastly, I just want to also, is the repeal, I think there's also on the front side of this, is there's some energy efficiency issues. I mean, districts are not going to start August 1st if they're going to have to run their air conditioning systems for a month. So I think that kind of creates a negative incentive for them on the front end as well. So I think that they will take that into consideration when they make their decision. So I'll conclude with that, ma'am.
Thank you very much. And then Mr. Grunfest. And since there are questions, if you could stay towards the front or nearby. Welcome to the committee, Mr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Scott Grunfest with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Try to be brief. First, I would like to point out that AMSC actually would prefer the total repeal, but we do think that this is a reasonable compromise, and so we do certainly support the bill as amended. The other thing I'd like to talk about is summer learning loss. More and more evidence mounts showing that the achievement gap is greatly impacted by summer learning loss. And that refers to what students lose between their last day of school and when school starts. In fact, the landmark really research was undertaken by Johns Hopkins University that studied 7,000 students at the Baltimore Public Schools, followed them over multiple years, and the end result was that two-thirds of the achievement gap in Baltimore was directly attributable to summer learning loss. What does that really mean? What it means that we should be talking about is year-round schools, or certainly longer schools, rather than things like Labor Day school start. The second item I'd like to point out is that we conducted a survey, or sponsored a survey by Decision Resources a year ago, and the results of that survey showed that 81% of the respondents supported allowing locally elected school boards, giving them the authority to decide when school should start. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you very much. And now we'll go to questions, and we want to be sure we give the other side, which has four testifiers signed up and another person who is here that would like to, who would like to testify if there's time, about the same amount of time at least that we gave this side, since there's more people. So if people could make their questions concise. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, Representative Pingleberry, we were working a working group on school mandates, and this was one topic that came up a lot from the different districts that we surveyed. And again, personally, I believe in local control, and that, again, it's been a priority for many, many districts that we surveyed, and that was one of the questions that was discussed at our meetings. And also a thing we're going to look at, because Menscu, many of your technical colleges are trying to get the calendars to combine for their STEP program, that they can get students to come from the high schools to take courses at the Menscu institutions. I know Anoka Tech is one institution that is running that program for students. So it gives the students the flexibility to do these types of things with the Menscu system. So I support the bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be as brief as possible, but this is important to my district, so I don't know how brief I will be. You know, the number of testifiers prior to that said their survey showed, my survey shows opposition to this bill from my constituents. And I want to tell you a few reasons why. First of all, I know I've been here long enough to know that once something gets in, it gets passed, if it's of a concern, you know, it's not guaranteed that it'll be changed. It's if we try something and it works, and then whatever. So once something is in, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to go back to the other system. You know, you talked about the resort industry. The resorts can't stay open if we don't have people there. How many of you have taken a vacation in Brainerd in August? Don't raise your hands, but I'm probably sure that a number of you have. Or another resort area. So we need people in order for the resorts to be open, and then those resorts also need the employees that they have frequently use as school students to be employees. But I've also heard from my small businesses too. The people in Mifflin, the people in Crosby, the people in Brainerd and Baxter, who own small businesses who rely on that total summertime business to operate their business and secure their funds, as my good friend Representative Anzalone talked about as well. They can't afford a 1 or 2 week or 3 week or whatever non-tourism industry or non-people that can't come because their children are in school at that time. I would talk about AC, using your air conditioner. I would say that the air conditioners are used more in August than in September. We talk about how many states have a post-Labor Day start. We're only one of three. How many of those states, 50 states, have a state fair at the end of August? Local control. You know, we all say and talk about local control, and I think that is important. I know in Rochester, for example, they use their local control to create a year-round calendar in one of the elementary schools that has shown remarkable results, Representative Martin, I believe. And I think that is one of the things that maybe we need to look at for education, period, but we need to do it at a statewide basis, in my opinion. I just hear from my constituents that we prefer a post-Labor Day start in our district for all of those reasons, and I hope that members will consider all of that, and I'm opposed to this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ward. I'm just going to ask if we have three more people on the list, if they have questions, because I think we want to wait feel we've heard from all the testifiers. We have some people that have driven a long ways to get here that want to testify on this bill. So let's hold the statements from legislators. We can make our statements another, to each other, and we have the floor and so forth. But if we could stick with questions and then get in all the testimony before we go to comments from legislators. So, Representative Brown, do you have a question?
I have a question.
Representative Brown.
You can wait. I'll be on.
Okay. Representative Garofalo, do you have a question?
I do.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, my question, a couple of questions for Dr. Curry.
Dr. Curry.
Yes. And we're going to miss you, Doctor. You've done a great job. I know, being a superintendent.
Thanks. It's just John, by the way, in fairness to people that have doctors.
I'm a graduate of Cedar Park Elementary and Scott Highlands Middle School and Rosemont High School in your district. Got to show the proper respect. The start and stop dates under your two schedules right now, do you know what those days are?
Yes.
Three.
Excuse me. Thank you. Actually, I don't have to look. I remember them. And one of the things in the past, when the legislature has approved this, they've set September 1st as the start date. That's a Tuesday this year, and actually we prefer the 31st, which is a Monday, which allows us 5 days. So if we start on August 31st, then our last day of school is on June 4th of Friday.
And
Representative Garofalo.
And Madam Chair, Dr. Curry, the second option?
The second option would be starting school on September 8th and dismissing on June 12th, I believe.
Representative Garofalo.
Friday, June 11th.
11th, excuse me.
Madam Chair, Dr. Curry, how long is under the second, under both those options, how long is the Christmas vacation?
Dr. Curry.
Madam Chair, it is the same length.
Representative Garofalo.
Would that be 16 days?
No.
Three.
Oh, excuse me. Madam Chair, no, it is, yes, it's the same length both times. This past year, because of the placement of Christmas, we had a 2-week winter break. That's not true the years that's not in effect.
So,
Madam
Chair, Dr. Curry, how many school days are in the 196 school year? How many, instructional days are there in the school year?
Dr. Curry.
174.
And final question, Dr. Curry, or two more questions. So if the 174 days, wouldn't there be the flexibility to remove 3 or 5 days from the current vacation schedule? You didn't answer the Christmas vacation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Went the right way. The number of vacation days in the school year, wouldn't there be the opportunity just to remove the number of vacation days and accomplish the same goal so that on June 4th, you'd still have the same date of school ending, so you don't go into that second week of June? Wouldn't that flexibility still be available?
Exactly.
Well, we have some flexibility, but the reality would be is we have what we believe is a minimum number of break days for Christmas, which is 7. In counting Christmas Eve day and Christmas and then going into the next week. Then we have a week spring break, which is fairly well accepted in our community, and I don't know that people are willing to have less of a spring break. We have Days for Education Minnesota, and then we have a work day at the end of each trimester and very few other days. We do not have late starts or early dismissals, and so it is not as simple, we believe, as taking and eliminating all the breaks in between just to condense the school year.
Madam Chair,
Representative Garofalo, last question.
Thank you. Dr. Curry, in the surveys you mentioned how residents of 196 preferred having the earlier start date and then getting out earlier in June. Do you have any opinions on if a third option would have been presented to them of starting post-Labor Day but still finishing on June 4th? I know you didn't ask that question, but do you have any opinions on how people would have responded to that?
Dr. Curry.
Yes, I can tell you a lot of people would prefer that. They think we have too many days during the school year. But the reality is when you start to take some of those days out, there is less acceptance for that.
Thanks, Tom.
Kirk Schultz, Hospitality Minnesota, and Joel Carlson, Congress of Minnesota Resorts. And then after them, we have Bob Tyson, resort owner, and Joel Bagnoli from the Minnesota State Fair. And if there's still time, and we've had about 20 minutes so far, but a lot of this has actually been anti, but we do have to get around to member discussion, and then we have another bill. So let's go through all this testimony, and then I'll go back to Representative Brown and then Representative Angel.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So is Mr. Carlson, you're going first?
Sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Joel Carlson. I own a government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I probably testified on this issue more than any other in my tenure at the Capitol. And, you know, want you to know on behalf of the Congress and Minnesota Resorts that we believe education is a top priority for the state of Minnesota. And that we support it. Our concern is that we do not believe that the change that's before you has anything to do with improved educational outcomes. And, you know, when you recognize all of the competing interests that that you have to deal with, we just do not believe that this change, which can have significant consequences, and you'll hear from resorters and others, significant consequences for their businesses, that we're just not getting any educational benefit for that change. And I've got going around with the page several school calendars, and Labor Day doesn't get any earlier than it did this year. It was September 1st. And this year, school ends in a number of districts, including the ones I'm sending around, on June 11th. Under the proposed calendar for Rochester, with Labor Day starting, school starting on September 8th, school ends on June 11th. It doesn't have any impact on the end date. It doesn't have a difference. And in the same, I sent around the the District 196 calendar as well, and it would end a week earlier if you do adopt this change. But if you don't, the calendar right now ends on June 9th, and their proposed calendar, if they start on September 8th, is June 11th, 2 days. You know, I just got to tell you that that change means a lot to the state of Minnesota, and we're proud that Minnesota is one of only three states that do this. It protects our heritage of summer in Minnesota, and we would encourage you, as you look at this issue, to balance all of the interests of your state. We went from 3,000 resorts in Minnesota, we're down to about 800. And this isn't just an issue for the districts in northern Minnesota. Those resorts are your constituents' access to our great resources in Minnesota. And when they're gone, they never come back. And so we would ask you to please consider the potential benefit that you get from changing, which we think is little or none, and the serious negative consequence that this can have to a significant segment of the state. Thank you, Madam Chair, and happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Kirk Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of this committee. I'm with the Madison Hospitality Group, and our company currently owns five hospitality businesses in Minnesota. I agree that this is not just a resort issue. This is a tourism issue which represents an $11 billion economy to the state of Minnesota. Albeit, we do have a resort in northern Minnesota up in Ely, Minnesota. I did just a quick comparison in regards to specific data. How would this actually financially affect us? And I think it's fair to say that the economy is currently in an economic tsunami right now. And anything that we do to reduce revenues and not increase jobs is something that we shouldn't even be dealing with at this current time, in our opinion. But how does it, you know, specifically affect us in Ely, Minnesota? I just took our revenues the week before and the week after and did just a brief comparison in regards to those revenues. Our revenues declined 56.62% pre and post Labor Day. And so in turn, the economic effect to making a change to the Labor Day school start is significant. In Ely, Minnesota, we refer to what we call the 100 days of summer. And those 100 days of summer is a matter of make or break if we survive or don't survive. And I think it's also fair to say that when we went through and did a brief comparison, we operate Thumper Pond Resort, Le Bourget Aero Suite in Bloomington, the Holiday Inn in Alexandria, the Grand Ely Lodge in Ely, Minnesota, and we're fortunate to have the great Culver's Butterburger restaurant in Alexandria, Minnesota. Pre and post date, here is the different percentage of revenue. A drop in our Bloomington property of 9.89% pre and post revenue. Currently, the Bloomington market is currently within our competitive set, seeing a 23% drop in revenue currently in this current economic environment that we're in. We can't afford anything else going on. Our Holiday Inn in Alexandria last year was an anomaly. Their sales actually increased 30.24% due to a large convention that was at the hotel that was unusual. Our Calder's Family Restaurant drops 13.57%. So collectively, that's even with the increase, is a 13.26% drop in revenue. This is a significant issue to the resort industry, to the retail business, to the state fair, to the restaurant business, and to the $11 billion tourism industry that we have in Minnesota. We have 100 days of summer. Taking 1 week or 10 days away represents a significant difference. Thank you, Madam Chair, and representatives of the committee.
Thank you very much. Bob Tyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bob Tyson. My wife and I, Cindy, back there, we own Good Old Days Family Resort up in beautiful Nisswa, Minnesota. Hi, John. I know this is probably a tough issue for John because for many years I drove school bus and I used to drive his students around for service learning. He's a retired school teacher and a darn good one. However, a lot of the points that John brought up are correct. I hear all kinds of testimony from people saying, well, it should be a local control issue. You know, if Brainerd and Nisswa, if they want to have a post-Labor Day school start, fine, yeah, you do that. The problem is Nisswa and Brainerd people don't come to our resort. It's people from the Twin Cities. It's people from Rochester. It's people from the outstate. And the other big thing that seems to be missed here is there's a certain amount of lag time that happens when you start changing things. When you change from a post-Labor Day start to a pre-Labor Day start, the spigot turns off. Those people stop coming immediately. When you turn around and try to switch it back, it takes years for us to build that business back up again. We can't just turn it back on and get people used to coming back to our resorts again that same week. Now, Cindy and I had, you know, personal experience with what happens when it changes. We bought our resort in 1999. It was in rough shape. We worked hard and it took us a couple of years, but we finally got those last few weeks in August to Labor Day filled 100%, and we did it for several years, 7 years, I think. As soon as that change came around, we saw almost a 30% drop in our August business. In 2 years, that cost us personally over $10,000. You know, and that's usually what we get to live on throughout the winter when we're closed. So I really think that folks need to understand what the unintended consequences are, and we're just one little tiny resort out of all the 800. Some of the other things that John brought up and some of the other folks have brought up is the fact that we're only one of three states that has a summer set, and I think that's a good thing. We're probably the only state that has 10,000 lakes. Like Michigan, we are heavily tourist laden for the way we make our living. I don't think that's anything to be ashamed of. I think it's a tradition that should live on. Some of the other things. With all due respect, Representative Norton, with their 183 school day calendar, you know, she's saying, well, we can't change it now because it's too late. Well, with a little advanced planning, you know, it's amazing what we can get done. And some of the questions on some of these surveys that the school boards were putting out were very loaded questions. And like you brought up, sir, nobody was given the opportunity to be asked whether they would like to start after Labor Day and end in early June. They weren't given that option. So I think some of those questions were quite loaded toward what the school boards wanted to hear. That's all I have. Thank you.
All right, thank you
for hearing us.
Mr. Tyson. Joe Bagley.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli with McGrann Shea Law Firm, representing the Minnesota Agricultural Society, better known as the Minnesota State Fair. The Minnesota State Fair, as most of you are aware, is a metro-based organization that is a rural, frankly, dominated by rural member folks that you described as rural members. It is a place that I think I grew up in the Twin Cities and was a place for fun for me to come. But as the resort folks talked about the great migration north in the summer, and especially at the last couple of weeks of summer, which tend to be some of the nicest in the summer, there's a converse great migration from some of the rural areas down to the Twin Cities for the State Fair, as well as to do after school shopping. I'm told by the folks at the Mall of America that weekend tends to be one of their highest, best weekends that they have, other than some big sale weekends for Christmas. So it is an enormously important time of the year, I think, for the state and certainly for the State Fair. The State Fair, I think, prides itself, and I think in the last committee we said, we believe that the State Fair and folks that sit on the State Fair view the State Fair as one large educational opportunity with a little bit of food and entertainment thrown in. If you think about it, the horticultural exhibit, the farm, the barns that folks have their animals in, frankly, is a way for those of us who grew up in the cities to learn a little bit of something about the country, learn a little bit of something about agricultural of our community. Back when we used to have the machinery, we could climb around on that as well, which was fun and frankly educational, I think, at a certain level. Finally, and the most important thing, and there's been some reference to it, and it's really been gratifying. I told the folks at the fair that there's been acknowledgement that the fair does have educational value in the 4-H. Representative from the School Board Association mentioned that there's a willingness and acknowledgement of the educational value for those kids. And I've said it before that we had a member, I think, at this committee where somehow Representative Dabney got me into a conversation where I admitted that being intimate with animals or not intimate enough with animals. But for those who weren't on the committee, he's very clever. They're sharp in Minneapolis. They'll walk you into a corner and you're admitting things that you didn't know you even did. Just looking at you forced me into the conversation.
Mr. Magnolia, I just want to say it.
I'm so impressed with your apple.
I know your committee is completely quick. In any case, the educational opportunity for those who haven't participated in 4-H and Future Farmers, which I didn't, but I've been educated on this, is extraordinary. You take a young animal, train that young animal, work with that young animal over time. The culmination of it for most of these folks, there's dorms on the campus of the State Fair. Kids who win the best sheep or the best goat award get to go to the State Fair. And what's happened on I can only remember, the State Fair's only remember of one or two times where the school date's been changed, is that they've had to make a choice between staying home and going to school or going to the fair to show their animals. It's gratifying to know that, but for families, and there's in fact a person on the State Fair Board who's a superintendent who says, you know, I try to instill in my children that school is important, and we try not to take them out for things, even if we think that they're important as well. So it puts families, in fact superintendents, in perhaps odd position choosing something over school, whether or not they want to or not. We think it's important. It's obviously an economic driver in the Twin Cities during that time, and we sure would appreciate your support against this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bagnoli. We have one more person that I think we will get in because we still have five more minutes before we go to questions or comments. John Valerie, if I'm pronouncing that right, are you still here?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and if you could restate your name for the tape.
Yes, John Valerie. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and please indulge me as I read my comments. I'm not in my tenure, if you will. Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm John Dowling, manager of Braemar Golf Course in Edina.
I am the immediate past president of the Minnesota Golf Association, an association of 85,000 members and 450 golf clubs, both public and private, across the state. Its floor, Minnesota Tourism, has an advisory council appointed by the governor to address program and policy issues that impact tourism in Minnesota. I represent golf on and to the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. The council includes all aspects of tourism industry in our state, from large conventions and business bureaus to hundreds of smaller resorts, restaurants, lodging, retail, transportation, recreational facilities, including state parks and golf courses. We also have two members of the House, Representative Ward and Norris, two members of the Senate, Olson and Koch, on our council. One of the significant areas of the council input is public policy. The Public Policy Committee is chaired by Lisa Paxton of the Brainerd Chamber of Commerce. One of the major issues the committee and the council has addressed is of the impact of the school calendar year. The council has deliberated this issue once again. I'm in a very contentious setting here, sometimes I feel, and by a strong majority vote, comes down on the side of the status quo. The Tourism Council respects the view that individual school districts exercise local rule. However, the greater good in this instance is both families' desire to be able to have an important long week together, holiday week, and the thousands of small businesses across the state be able to retain its employees for the holiday week. Very importantly, it is a huge financial week for tourism. The council strongly recommends that you continue to begin school after the Labor Day weekend. With some school districts trying out a four-day week, it would seem consistent and logical that these few hours of attendance in question could be located within the post-Labor Day school year. I thank you for the opportunity to present today. I would also like to mention these two other issues. As was formerly mentioned, tourism is an $11 billion industry in our state, and also 15% of the state's sales tax is derived from that point. Thank you for the opportunity to present.
Thank you very much. We're going back to our list now. We have Representative Brown, Representative Anzels, and Representative McFarland, and then we are going to go to Representative Norton for a closing comment, and then we're going to vote, because we do have Representative Detmer's bill. Representative Brown.
Chair Grayling and Representative Norton. When I read through this bill, the first thing that I thought was I totally respect the tourism industry and their comments and their concerns about the bill, which is why I would have liked to have seen that study that had initially been in the bill so that we can make some really good choices. I'm going to say that first off. I'm also in the districts that are right now sitting with two different calendars trying to make make a decision about what they're going to do, so I know that it's very important to have this happen as quickly as possible. And with that said, and maybe this is a totally political answer that I'm going to get, considering where I'm sitting, but with that said, and the fact that it seems to be traditionally that we have granted the change in date on years such as these that we have coming up, why are we not doing something as simple as going to that paragraph B and adding this type of exemption into the future in situations when we have a date that comes as it does this year and next?
Representative Norton.
Well, I can tell you that I carried two separate bills. One was a total repeal, which I assume these gentlemen would be even more concerned about than the moratorium for 2 years, given the date, and this one. I guess I didn't, I wasn't offered the opportunity and didn't think of perhaps something that would, different language. I certainly think that's worth discussing. It's just not one of the two bills that I'm carrying.
Mr. Mm-hmm. Brown, I like your idea, so maybe mm-hmm. it's a bill for next year. We take a lot of time every time mm-hmm. with this. When we have these sorts of situations. But that would probably be a harder bill to pass, but I think it's worth considering. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Norton and your testifiers, this isn't about Rangers or 4-H or closing the achievement gap. It's about why we came here the first week in January, and that's to try to correct this horrible economic condition that the people of Minnesota are in and state government is in. And I can't in good conscience vote for your bill because you're asking this committee to add to the problem. Your bill exacerbates an already horrible condition, and I know it's not perfect. And I would remind you that it was Governor Perpich in 1985, faced with a recession, minuscule in comparison to this one, who first asked the legislature to change the school start involving Labor Day. And he did it because the tourism and hospitality industry is a critical player in this state's economy and tax collection. So give those people a chance and let us work a little bit more focused on getting out of this dilemma. I can't support your bill.
Thank you very much. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is more of a statement or a clarification. I think Mr. Straw might be able to help me. Is it not true that we don't have consistent number of school student contact days for school in this state? Because I think many times we're talking about that we can change our calendars to fit these all within the days, but we don't have consistent days, so it makes it harder for some districts.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, yes, the calendars range by quite a bit from district to district. There's a requirement that the school year be as many days as was the 96-97 school year, but it can vary from district to district.
So what would McFarland? Thank you, Madam Chair. So that, what would be the average number of days within, like, 172 to 178?
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, the number of student contact days is in the range of about 171, 172 days on average.
Okay. And I'll just make one other comment. I have served on a calendar committee in my district. It is not the most pleasant job.
I did that when I was on the school board, too, and I don't think we got very far with that either, trying to have common calendars so we could do better with after-school activities. But we couldn't get over those culture wars. So, Representative Norton, any closing comments before we vote on your bill?
Oh, Madam Chair, there's so many. I am not so hard that I don't understand the resort industry's concerns. I do. But I'm here for academic reasons. I'm standing in front of the K-12 Finance Committee, and that's what I'm focusing on right now. And if I had hardcore proof that there had been an impact, I might have hesitated, but I don't have that data. And perhaps with the great data that at least the one resort owner had, he'll be able to come back in 2 years after this moratorium is done and be able to share with us whether there was an impact or not. And I would welcome that since we've taken the study out. And I would say to Representative Anzell, Governor Perpich did put this in there, and unfortunately there has continued to be a steady decline because it hasn't made the difference that we had hoped it would for the resorts. One of the reasons I'm here today. I would say to all of you again, this is not a mandate for school start time. It is a choice. Different areas can choose to do as they wish. And that coming from a golfing family, I had to chuckle. I have three golfers in my family. One was a professional. One manages a golf course. The other is a retired addict to golf. And I will tell you, there's no question that they would prefer to golf that second week in June than in September. All three of them, and their business is also better in June than it is in September. So again, I'm just asking for your support for a 2-year moratorium to let local districts do what's best for their kids, and hope you'll support my bill.
Representative Anzell, I've already denied Representative Garofalo a second small comment, so if that would be all right, I will just, otherwise we won't have enough time for Representative Demmer's bill. He asked for one sentence. Okay. We'll skip the two sentences from two more, and I will renew my motion that House File 12, 195. Okay, I'm looking at the wrong place. House File 195 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Finance Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
The motion
division, please, Madam
division
Chair.
Has been called for. All those in favor of House File 195, raise their hands. No two hands from anybody.
Sounded closer.
Okay, are you done counting? Okay, all those opposed.
Did you get mine?
Yeah. All right. There being 14 in favor and 5 against, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Norton.
Thank you,
Representative Detmer. Representative Detmer, you are on the committee, so you may move your own bill.
Madam Chair and Committee, I move House File 320 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill.
Representative Detmer moves House File 320 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill, and you have an amendment.
Amendment, Madam Chair, Amendment 320A1 Amendment.
Representative Detmer moves Amendment 80320A1, and Representative Detmer, what is that amendment?
Basically, on page 1, lines 18 to 20, we delete the new language. Page 2, lines 2 through 4, reinstate the stricken language. And page 3, lines 4 through 6, delete the new language.
Okay, and Representative Detmer, what is the, so we, maybe everybody hasn't followed all that, what are you doing with the amendment?
Madam Chair, in the testimony with the policy committee where the bill was first heard, basically what we're trying to do is clean up some legislation that was passed last year. Representative Bigham was the author. I was one of the co-authors, and we also served on the conference committee to bring this through. There was a concern of the original language by the School Board Association that the schools might have to pay for the background checks on staff. Now, that was not my intention. The word may was used, so just to accommodate their concerns, I took that language out. And basically, House File 220 basically says that in terms of volunteers, many schools use a lot of volunteers that come into the school district, whether it's elementary through high school. And I had school districts call me and say, we have to now allow them, the volunteers have to pay for their background checks. Whereas before, the school districts always paid for the background checks for volunteers. Now, the new law last session required background checks. And now school districts were questioning, well, now if we can't pay for them and we want to pay for them, we would be against the state statute. So the language just says that school districts may pay for the background checks of volunteers when people come in and volunteer. So that's all it does.
Representative Detmer, your amendment removes everything except the language pertaining to volunteers.
For the volunteers.
Okay. Any questions on the A1 amendment? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And then to the bill that's remaining, Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair and Committee, again, basically what the bill does is clean up the language from the original statute that school districts now may pay for the background checks of volunteers. And that's it.
All right. Any questions from the members? Any testimony for or against? Any questions? I guess we're all worn out after Representative Norton's bill. Representative Detmer then renews his motion that House File 320 be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill and laid over until that time. Any discussion on that amendment? Okay. I guess we do not need to vote on that because that will be discussion in the omnibus bill. So thank you, Representative Detmer, for having a straightforward bill.
Thank you, ma'am.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not, we talked about this previously in another committee hearing, and I'm wondering if you might have, as one of the lead chairs of the Finance Committee, if you might have any new information from Representative Solberg. As we know, the budget forecast is coming out next Tuesday. I mean, it's generally expected that not only is the next biennium going to get a bit worse, but this biennium is going to show a negative number. Has Chairman Solberg or the Ways and Means Committee given you any direction on whether they're going to solicit impact or solicit input from us on what negative committee targets for this biennium? Are they just going to make a mini version of House File 1812? Are they giving us any direction in process on how, for the current biennium, how they're going to address that, whether it's revenue raisers or budget reductions? Any insight?
Representative Garofalo, that is something that is of interest to all of us. And so it's a very good question, and it's being discussed. We have the listening sessions where we're going out and about, you know, that's kind of phase one of trying to decide what to do, and then we get the forecast again on March 3rd, we get the governor's budget again, and until that time, you know, all of us are welcome to come forward with our ideas of what to cut, what to raise, what to do differently. And we're looking especially at any bills that have been introduced to, you know, with an eye to that. But as you can see, we're looking at just regular run-of-the-mill bills here this week because we haven't been heavy on any magical solutions from anybody. So I don't exactly know what to tell you. You can discuss it with Representative Solberg, too. With our working groups, we're trying to see if we can come forward with anything that will help with the discussion this year. As you know, it's a small amount of money, but the permanent school fund bill that we have considered would help with our budget, but it wouldn't help with Environmental Finance Committee's budget. We have coming up soon Representative Tilbury's mandate reduction bill, and we'll hear his bill, but he's put together a skeletal bill, and all of us on this committee need to take it seriously if there's anything to add to it. That will be discussed in the policy committee for policy items and in this committee for finance items. We have the DSEG committee that Representative Brown and Representative Newton are chairing, and the governor has recommended that we freeze and cap desegregation revenue. So when we hear from their working group, we will consider that. We are going to hear the governor's bill, as you know, and I think you're carrying that, and I'm sure you'll have revisions after the forecast as to what you're carrying. I'm not sure, but I'm just expecting that you would anyway. And then, what's our other work? Oh, that's the one I started making this point about. I'm saving you for last, and then I totally spaced. Representative Swales has the Shared Services and Efficiencies Group, and I hope that all of us are giving her lots and lots of help, because I think it's very simplistic to just cut things or raise revenue, and we don't look, when we have a deficit like this, on what can we do differently. So we all should be helping out with her, her working group, and feeding any suggestions or coming up with any ideas of our own of how we can do things differently. I myself signed on to things like this in other areas that other legislators are working on, like having less counties. I've, you know, had some discussions with one of my county commissioners about the governor's Health and Human Services recommendation for less counties and more service delivery systems. I think this is the year for those kinds of preparations, and we should all not be sitting here waiting to just bash the governor's budget or bash the plan that comes out of the majority party. We should be trying to come up with solutions of our own as well. And I think it's a very hard year. I think if we, you know, raise revenue, make huge hurtful cuts, we still aren't going to balance this budget very well. And I'm not at all excited about the federal stimulus money coming to this committee once we found out that it means a permanent cut later if we get cut in order to accept it. So I don't think we have good choices, and I don't know the timeline. I'm not privy to Representative Solberg's timeline, but he has, and Representative Carlson as well, have advised all of us to be, you know, looking at cutting. They haven't actually advised us to look at raising, but I am certainly thinking along those lines, and then how to do things differently. We just had a discussion with the fiscal chairs this morning where I again put in a plug for the doing things differently, because I feel like we're more looking at cutting and raising and not doing things differently, like I think Representative Swales' working group for this year and for the future is hugely important, and we ought to be taking it very seriously. Detmer and then Biskin. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just going back to the bill we just discussed, I just thought of it when I sat down here. Right now, school districts have to abide by the current statute. So right now, they cannot pay for the background checks of volunteers coming into the school. Would it be wise for us maybe put this on the calendar to get a change for the school districts? Or I'm just a question regarding that.
Well, we already finished up with that motion for
right.
some time, but let's talk about that and
yeah.
we can consider that.
Yeah, thank you.
So we should have talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I want to let you know that I join your hands and Rahm Emanuel's hands when we say we shouldn't waste a good crisis. It is an opportunity to look at efficiencies and reforms, and I applaud your words to the committee and will take them to heart. Madam Chair, just a point of clarification for this member. If the February forecast, which will be presented on March 3rd, does indeed show a continuing deficit yet in this biennium. Madam Chair, is it in the purview of the governor to unallot, or if while we're in session, does the deficit have to be erased via legislative action?
Some distance, I'm going to turn to Mr. Strom so we get it exactly right, but I think you weren't here one day when I was surprised. I was thinking the governor could only unallot when we weren't in session, and we found out that I was wrong about that, a first time, of course. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Fiskin, the statute allows the governor to unallot at any time, and in fact requires him to do so that the budget is balanced at the end of the fiscal year 2009. Which is June 30th, 2009. There's no requirement that the legislature not be in session for him to unallot.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm still looking around and there's still no WWGPD bracelets on, so I hope the governor does sit down and work with you as the lead of this committee, all right, and so that there's legislative input into this process, seeing as we're in session anyway.
I certainly hope so too, Representative Gibson. And just another word is before we adjourn, our bill is passed along to be considered by Representative Swales' committee. And in her opening letter that she sent out to her working group members, she put in a lot of suggestions to get the juices flowing. And the Biskin's Griling bill was one of those lines in her letter. So if there's no further discussion, members, the meeting is adjourned.